You're now listening to La Verdad Podcast. Bueno, mi gente, we're back at it again. This is La Verdad Podcast. This is your boy, Christian.
And this is Carlos. I'm real happy to be here. I got a really good friend of mine, un amigo personal. I've known him since I was about 12, 13.
Oh, yeah.
He was my older brother's friend, and I was kind of just like the younger brother tagging around. Yeah, this is a guy I've been in his house for years. So he used to spend hours in his house, then come to my house and spend more hours there.
Yeah.
And
that was a long time ago.
I know we've had a few shows about music. We've had a few shows about like the La X Tropical, the radio station in Chicago. But Christian and I both really love, you know, that urban genre, urban hip-hop, especially hip-hop in Espanol, reggaeton. And I said, yo, I got the perfect person, because we used to sit and have these, you know, when those early debates, who started reggaeton, you know, Puerto Rico, Panama, who's better than who? Is, you know, is the Tempo? No, it's Tego, it's Daddy Yankee. But then we also used to mess around making beats, and we all stopped, but our guest today actually continued it. So, without further ado, we've got Nelson Rios. How are you doing, Nelson?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, we'll talk about all those stuff.
Thank you for joining us, man. I'm excited about this podcast because music is where I come from. You know, music's been part of my life. And even before we started this podcast today, we already know a bunch of people in common because of music, because it's such a small community and everybody kind of takes care of each other. But back to what Carlos was saying, reggaeton for us was like, when you talk to our parents, you know, they might talk about the oldies, you know, like Motown or maybe a little bit, like for my parents was like Salsa Romantica, you know, when they were listening to Frankie Ruiz and all these guys, that was their time. But I could see myself a couple years from now, you know, when I'm hitting my 40s, late and 50s, and my daughter asking me, I'll be like, yo, ¿tú no te acuerdas de Don Omar o los maleanteos y la tiradera que se tiraba Don Omar and Daddy Yankee? You know, like, that was our time. And Carlos and I, we always get together and we talk about reggaeton because we identify with that. It just takes us back into memory. So I'm glad you're able to join us.
Thank you.
I'm going to pick your brain mostly for my own reasons because I'm a music guy. But let's talk, yeah, man.
And I'll be chiming in. But honestly, these two guys are the music experts. I'm just like the super music fan.
Yeah.
They're fans also, but they've actually worked in creating of the music. You guys might hear some kids every once in a while, but listen, it's La Verdad Podcast. We keep it real.
Estamos en familia.
My daughter's in the room next to us. So are Nelson's kids, and my wife is kind of watching them while we watch them from another room. But you know, you might have kids walking around, but that's cool. I mean, we keep it real. It's a home setup, right? And like, we know you guys love it. We always do the same thing. And so, Christian.
Yeah, man.
What are the two music guys want to talk about?
Oh, man, we're going to be talking for a while. But what genre do you work with?
See, I started actually doing reggaeton.
Yeah, okay.
So in that time, around 2003 was actually the summer that I graduated high school.
Okay.
That's the same summer that I don't know, I'm sure Carlos remember we joined the Batucada.
Yeah, but I can break that down. Batucada is a Brazilian form of music.
Yes.
And it's got a very specific, like, you know how when you listen to dembo or you know that ta 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 ta.
Yeah.
And when you listen to the salsa, you know the ta ta ta.
The clave.
I mean,
Batucada had its own distinct beat. And so that's where it started. We joined, there was a community group here, and they used to have like a music program for kids after school. And so he and I were a part of it, my brothers, my cousins, his brother. Yeah. We used to do it just to mess around after school. You want to keep going with that?
Yeah. Everything just started there, you know.
And were you guys playing the instruments too?
It was live.
Okay.
The fundamental of the going through that whole process, it was learning percussion and how percussion and timing works along each other to make a rhythm.
Yeah.
You know, and that summer, you know, I had just graduated high school. Carlos, his other brothers was still in high school, you know, and I was at a point where I needed to do something for myself, you know,
creatively.
So I joined them, you know, and it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the whole learning process, going through the whole, you know, the whole class, and, you know, meeting other people, learning the instruments, you know, and how they work together to actually come up with a rhythm.
Yeah.
So everything for me started right there and then.
Okay.
You know, I was making beats before then, but, you know, just the whole fundamentals as far as music, everything started
understanding
there.
The fundamentals, yes. In that sense. So you don't have do you have any family that's musical background, like?
To be honest, nobody is. But my I think one of the biggest influence has actually been my dad, mm-hmm. my father.
Okay.
You know, I grew up, I was born in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
What part?
Bayamón.
Bayamón, okay. Big shout out to Bayamón.
Yeah, shout out to Bayamón. You know, and just growing up, you know, all he listens to, like you said, mm-hmm. is old school salsa.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, and... You know, growing up and just going through, you know, sitting back in the car and just listening to all the old school salsa, you know, and then later on in life, joining the batucada, taking piano classes after that, you know, everything just kind of transformed the way I make my own music.
Okay.
You know, and at this point, you know, music... It's a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. Music is you. The way an artist sings a song to translate their emotions through music, I do the same way with every single instrumental that I make.
Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, some of the titles that, you know, I have a website, you know, where I post all my beats.
What website is that? Get a little closer, you sound a lot better.
Yeah. It's mixbeatsforsale.com.
Okay.
Soon, you know, later on today, I just purchased O'Neill Beats.
Okay.
Nice. That's nice. How I go for. If you go to mixbeatsforsale.com, all you see is O'Neill Beats. So, you know, it's a previous name that I had, you know, used for search engine optimization purposes, mm-hmm. yeah. You know, and I have a background in social internet marketing.
Yeah.
You know, and search engine optimization, all that stuff. So, you know, but later on today, it's going to be O'Neill Beats.
Okay.
.com. But yeah, I mean, I have all the beats laid out on there. And if you really, really listen to every single track that I have, the titles goes with the beat.
Yeah.
In some way, somehow, every single thing that I do on there, I mean, it just kind of comes together to come up with that, you know, to the titles. It's just like an artist.
And that's a very interesting theme, because when you talk to other people, for example, people that write for a living, right? They might write books or whatever, and you lay out. You know, so a lot of people lay out the introduction, the body, and the conclusion,
the
right?
Structure.
The structure on it. And then I talk to some musicians and people, producers, people that do beats, and they might tell me, I usually start with the hook, you know?
Yeah.
Or I'll start with the intro. What's your methodology behind that?
See, I always think that music, you have to, you know, it's all about creativity.
Okay.
And that creativity comes with any sort of inspiration, whether you start with the drums, whether you start with the melody for a hook, or just whatever comes to my head, I just basically just put it out there.
Okay.
Sometimes I start with making the drums, which is my expertise.
Okay.
And then I just kind of start, you know, continue from there, you know, making different, you know, creating the different layout of the, you know, the composition.
Okay, so you started out, because I know producers, and big shout out to Elias who it's the guy who does our intro of our show is it was created by Elias. And I know there's been times that he'll create, you know, like a hook, and you know, I spent numerous hours in the studio with him, and he'll be doing, you know, he'll just come up with just the hook, and it'll take him hours for just to be to perfect that hook. You know the craft that you guys have, to me, is just outstanding. I used to mess around with beats here and there. I had Fruity Loops and Sonar for a while, and then I didn't have the patience for that, bro. I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna stick behind, let the artists do their thing, and then I'm gonna actually just do all the recording and engineering. So I know it must take a lot of patience, but does it come naturally to you now?
Was there
ever a time that it was like, man, no me está saliendo bien, like I can't
when we started,
you know? That I think that always happens to anybody. You know, Artists have their writer's block.
Yeah, yeah.
Producers have their, you know, producer block.
Have you ever
know?
Gone through like a long period of time where it's like can't get a beat out?
Due to circumstances in my life, yeah. Okay, okay. But, you know, it has never kept me away from being, you know, from doing music.
Okay.
You know, going back to what you were saying, you know, doing music is all about, you know, having discipline. You know, and if you know you can make things work, you can make it work with any software, whether it's, you know, Pro Tools, FL Studio, yeah. Logic, or anything like that. Good. It's all about being creative. If you already know the program, you would never think that the beats that I do actually comes from Fruity Loops.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you mistakes know, still.
No, and I know a lot
I still
of.
Use,
wow,
I use.
But you know, and you kind of mentioned it briefly there that it's just the program.
Yeah,
it's just the program.
There's because principles to creation.
Yeah, interface. Because a lot of times it's just so. Once you master that program, that you know what your mind is doing and you know how to tweak it in the program. So you want to stay using what you know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know my boy Elias does the same thing. He does it all through Fruity Loops. And some guys will be like, man, bro, like, for real? Like, do you still use Fruity Loops?
The thing is that people don't realize, you know, when I tell people I use Fruity Loops, they laugh at it. They think that I'm actually joking and that I'm using another software. Yeah. Fruity Loops is just an interface, just like Pro Tools or any other recording software. It's all about what you do with it, you know. And to be honest, I've used the first copy of Fruity Loops that I've ever had was Fruity Loops 3.4.
Was it pirateado?
No. No.
Mine was.
No.
Yeah. Everybody had that pirateado.
Let me tell you why, because I went to his house and everybody was going, I saw him starting to make a beat and I was like, oh, I want to do that. And so we went to my house and my older brother downloaded it. And then we started trying to play around and I was horrible. But just like you, Christian, I didn't have the patience for it.
I remember getting pirateado version and the CD will say, don't turn on the internet.
Yeah. Because then the update downloads.
Yeah, then the update. Mira,
the first copy of Fruity Loops that I ever had was 3.4, and it was given to me by my cousin Jonathan Don Gatillo.
Okay.
So if you guys don't know him,
dope rapper.
Yeah,
sick lyricist.
He's a very, very good lyricist, and he's definitely grown as far as music wise, and you know the way the lyrics work together. But he was the first one that gave me that software. Mm-hmm. Again, this was before I graduated high school.
Yeah.
So I've already known how to use that software even before I started doing what I'm doing today. Mm-hmm. You know, so thanks to him, you know, he was one of the few people that actually helped me push myself to that.
Yeah.
You know, to where I want to be, you know, where I am at this point.
Man, I remember I used to work for a big retail company that sells musical products. Mm-hmm. And I remember meeting this famous Chicago DJ that was big time in house. And I was talking to him and
you're not gonna say his name?
No, not right now. No, I will mention it. Yeah, his name is Fast Eddie. Okay. So he used to have a lot of, you know, he was well known in the Chicago area, and he was still making beats. And I was like, yo, like, what software do you use? He's like, man, I don't use none of that software crap. He's like, I do it all analog because that's still and with tape.
Reel to reel
because that's how. He was, you know, and me, the salesman that I was, I'm like, yo, why are you using reel to reel, man, when you could do it all on your laptop? And I actually sold him like a whole studio setup, but it was what he was used to and he knew how to use it. So then he didn't have to spend time learning how to master that.
Yeah.
Instead, he could spend the time learning how to master his beat, his music, you know, and that's the biggest thing that I tell a lot of people that ask me about music is learn the basics of the software, learn that. But then spend most of your time, you know, perfecting the software. And this kind of leads me into this topic of a lot of people becoming producers, musician, manager, everything all together. And they forget that there's a team behind a successful artist.
Yes.
Right. And I'm sure you probably being in the musical genre, I'm sure you probably get a lot of these cats that don't want to pay for beats, right?
And I feel your pain. I've seen this Facebook post complaining.
Oh my god!
People that want. And the reason beats. I brought that up is because we've entered into this realm,
yeah,
or of people. Oh, yo lo puedo hacer. You know, I could do it at home, or I got this guy that wants to do it, and they don't understand the time, and that's why I kind of been touching upon that.
It's
a lot.
Not just the time; is investment.
Yeah, all the equipment that you have, I'm sure you have.
If you guys, you know, any of you guys, you know any well-known artists invest on themselves. Mm-hmm. Real artists invest on themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, and part of that is investing on music. Mm-hmm. If you can't play any instruments or anything at all, artists, you know, real artists has to invest in their music.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't realize that there's a lot of work that goes behind of making music and making the best beat that they hear is like, wow, I want this. Mm-hmm. You know, and they don't understand that, you know. Yeah, you know, I do give out free beats all the time.
Yeah.
But it's all about true artists will invest on buying a license for it to actually to, you know, have it in writing. So that they could actually see the worth that they're putting into their music. You know, it's not always about, you know, I mean, it's kind of a hit or miss because, you know, as a producer, you know, in order to get yourself out there, you do have to give out something for free.
Yeah.
Even as an artist, you know, if you want to get yourself out there, you know, you have to give something out for free.
Yeah.
Whether it's a free show, free songs,
yeah,
you know, anything like that. Yep. You have to put yourself out there.
Yep. And that's where it becomes tough, too, because it's tough to make a living
doing
the production and being an artist because,
it is.
Unfortunately, some people give it out for free too much, you know what I'm saying? And they mess it up for everybody else.
It does.
And then you have people who are like, oh, este fulano de tal me dio la pista gratis, you know, like, why can't you give me? And it's like, bro, like, you don't, I can hear it.
I've seen situation where, you know, there's people that have come to me to buy beats.
Yeah.
And they want it for a cheaper price, but I've heard of them going to bigger producers and paying thousands of dollars for a beat so to do the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sometimes not always about where you buy the beat from. You know, it's all about creativity. Mm-hmm. It's all about what people likes.
Yep.
Exactly. You know, it's not always about, oh yeah, who made the beat, you know, who did this, who did that. I mean, think about Drake, for example. Yep. You know, the producers behind Drake, I think is Noah Forty is one of the biggest producers. Nobody knew who that guy was.
Yep.
Nobody.
And now he's hot everywhere.
You know, and again, it's not always about who you buy the beat from. Yep. It's all about the quality. It's about what you hear, what you can interpret as an artist through the music.
And that also brings up a good point because I don't know, the big hot song right now is the song by Designer Panda, right? And it's a simple beat. I mean, I'm sure it's a simple beat, but it's a catchy beat, you know. And the beat was actually ripped from YouTube.
Yeah,
I read about that. And like the producer is like this European guy, I think. Yeah,
I heard about that. Actually.
Yeah, yeah.
It was ripped through YouTube, but the actual producer was the designer paid $200 for that beat to that producer.
He's made millions off of it.
And he made millions off of that. Yeah. You know, think about it this way. And he's a big artist.
Yep. Yeah.
And I think that song was actually on Drake's album, too.
No, it was on Kanye.
Somebody,
Kanye blew it up.
Kanye, Life of Pablo?
Kanye put it in Life of Pablo as a part. Panda was its own song, but then Kanye added it to his album as part of another song, and he like mixed it with his own thing. Mm-hmm. One of the things I love about music and one of the powers of producers, though, is that a good producer with influence can set a moment in time, right? So when I think about when you and I met, Nelson, when we used to hang out a lot, if I listen to Los Doce Discípulos.
Yeah.
If I listen to any of those early Looney Tunes records, if I listen to Glory, if I listen to, right?
Wow.
Early Tego, early Don Omar. I remember, so my mind immediately takes me to that space. And yep. So what's cool about music is that a good producer can help set time for the whole world. Yeah. You got that when Jay-Z was hot, right? Who were the producers for Rockefeller? So it was Kanye West. It was Just Blaze. Yeah. It was a few other people. If you think about when the No Limit was hot, Manny Fresh, mm-hmm. he helped set a tone in a moment in time. And so that's the power of music.
And the crazy thing behind it is that a lot of the names behind the production are not really the ones that created that beat. They might have added things here and there, or they're one of the last ones to have it. But I think the root of it is that The beat makes mm-hmm. that song, you know. And then you have to have, you know, obviously strong lyrics behind it, or not even lyrics, because nowadays rap is all about mumbling or making funny rhymes and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, the beat is what drives that song, you know. You listen to a lot of, for example, Michael Jackson songs, mm-hmm. right? Songs that are gonna be timeless, you know. They're gonna be here forever. The beats are tight beats, you know, and you could tell that there was blood, sweat, and tears behind that production. So, you know, how long does it take you to create a whole instrumental?
You know what? Sometimes it all depends on the mood that I'm in, and you know, it can take me from start to finish after mixing and mastering about 3 or 4 hours.
Okay.
Sometimes
because you've perfected your craft.
Yeah, right? I mean,
it's been over 10 years.
Yeah. Remember, I mean, mm-hmm. back then, you know, 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, I mean, I would have taken me like a day, 2 days, sometimes mm-hmm. a week to actually finish the beat. Because I was still in that whole learning.
How to use the software, right?
Well, it was more of learning to, you know, mix, you know, and making it sound where, you know, unfortunately nowadays, people are more in tune with the first 10 to 15 seconds of each track.
True.
So my mindset back then was that, you know, every track that I do has to be catchy, you know, on the first 10, 15 seconds. So, you know, it took me a while to actually perfect that to mm-hmm. where I'm at this point. Yeah. You know, but it, you know, now, I mean, it only takes me about 2, 3 hours, 4 hours, you know, depending on how complicated the track is.
You can whip it out pretty quick.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's easier to do hip hop.
Really?
Yeah, believe it or not.
I thought it'd be tougher to do hip hop.
No, it's actually a lot tougher to do reggaeton.
Yeah, but
dancehall,
question for you on this, and this is a big debate in the reggaeton community, especially with producers. Do you use stock dembows, or do you create your dembows from scratch?
I, believe it or not, I make my own.
Okay.
And what I do is that I stack sounds
and
I blend them, you know, I pitch. I make sure that when I lay out my tracks, the drums are actually pitched in tune with the beat. Okay. And that's something that not everybody do.
Yeah.
That's something that, you know, hip hop producers, you may hear, you know, as you hear the 808 on the Panda song, mm-hmm. you know, it's in tune with the beat.
Yeah.
You know, I do the same thing, and I do the same thing with not just the bass, but I do that with overall percussion that I laid out.
And it's funny that you mentioned that, because we spoke when we had the Salsa podcast. My uncle had mentioned, he's like, yeah, what made him a unique percussionist, he was a big percussionist for a lot of salsa bands in Chicago, and what made him a unique percussionist was that he understood the way the chord progression will go into songs, so he will tune his congas or his timbales according to that song, and then it meshed really well together and it blended it. And I know my musicians that are listening out there, you understand it, but for those that are not musicians, when you have a chord, a structure of a chord, you know, you have like your three basic notes. If you have a note that does not fall in that chord, basically that one sound that you hear, it's gonna sound out of it. It's gonna sound out of
tune. I got no clue what they're talking about. keep on going. Keep on going. People want to know.
Basically, what I'm saying is that by you tuning your drums into the pitch of that song, or for example, my uncle tuning in his drums to the song, it creates a melody together, right?
Yes.
It meshes the song into one instead of tenemos este, instead of it sounding on separate locations, and that's what the human ear hears real quick.
Yeah.
They'll hear when it's not together. Yeah. I'm sure you probably heard Carlos. You probably heard this one rapper where like he makes like comedy stuff, and he has like. He's like this really ugly guy. And he does all these songs, and he puts like he sings to on top of the song, but it's out of pitch, and you could kind of tell. It's like a comedian guy.
Is he white?
No, Moreno. Like he had a whole like YouTube thing going on. But what I'm trying to say with that is that you could hear when somebody's singing out of pitch.
Yeah.
Right. And it hurts your ears.
And it hurts.
Right?
It throws off the experience from hearing that song.
So
it throws it off.
Exactly. So when you have a beat, and you could attest to this, when you have a beat that has the drums that are not in tune with the melody, it sounds like two different things are going on at the same time.
It throws it off. I mean, you basically hear two different sounds, two different. It's hard to explain it, but it's not. It's like it's all over the place.
Yep, it hurts your ears, man. It's just, and it doesn't make it. It doesn't. And then on top of that, if you sell your beat and somebody sings horrible on top of it,
oh my god!
Like, have you ever had a moment where you sold a beat and you're like, damn, I wish I would have not sold it to that guy?
Yes.
You want to mention any names? Or you want to keep that confidential?
Yes, it does. I mean, it's all the time. I mean. It hurts because I dedicate a lot of time into making, you know, these tracks, and you know, just to have somebody, you know, just kind of ruin it,
throw up on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean it hurts, you know, and I understand that the artist, you know it's really dedicated on their music and try to improve on it, you know. Not all artists are made the same.
Yeah.
You know, that's the reality of it. It's just the reality of it. I mean, they're not going to put an artist that, you know, is basically a brand new artist mm-hmm. with the first song on the radio.
Yeah.
Because you're going to notice the difference between that and the person that have been doing it for 5, 10, 15
years.
You could
tell. Years. Yeah, you could
tell. I mean, you can really tell. So, it does hurt.
And I could imagine it being kind of, because you get attached to a beat. I mean, and, yeah. And you know, I will say throughout my time, I probably did about 5 beats, right? They were all salsa inspired beats, you know? But I remember, you know, my boy Elias, because we have a studio together, we hung out all the time, and I'll be like, bro, bendele ese beat, you know, so we could buy a new microphone, you know? Nah, bro, this one's special. And I bet you, Elias, if you're listening to this right now, I bet you it's still in the same folder, in the same archive, nobody has touched it, but it was one of those that you created, and it was like from the heart, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so would you say the same thing happens to you?
Yeah, all the time.
So you have that folder in there that nobody...
Oh my God.
Porque todos los producers have that.
There's actually a couple of beats that I have not been able to sell because it means a lot. Yeah. I mean, I sell it as far as people being able to lease it, you know, for their mixtape and all that stuff. But when it comes to an exclusive, the way I work is, you know...
Explain that a little bit.
Yeah. Leasing versus exclusive. I was about to ask the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated.
Yeah.
Well, it's complicated, but it's not. You know, producers, you know, if you go on Google, you know, you search for beats, you know, you see people that are selling beats, you know, for $5, $10, $15, and mm-hmm. then they have another bracket where they're selling it
couple
for 20,
couple hundred,
yeah, and then another one for a couple hundred dollars. So what that means is that it's basically different licenses and different uses. You know, I personally sell three, four different leases. You know, I sell the MP3 lease for people doing their mixtape.
Yeah,
you know, and for a certain amount of copies. I sell that. I then sell, you know, a WAV file for $15.
Okay, so the quality of the sound changes the price as well,
because it helps narrow down those artists that are really investing on themselves.
Interesting.
And keep in mind, every person I sell beats, I keep track of their emails and their contacts.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and I've been blessed that ever since I launched my website back in 2013.
MixBeatsForSale.com.
MixBeatsForSale.com. You know, I have over 12,000 people.
Wow.
And this is
amazing.
You know, and that's on and off, you know, but I've been dedicated for more than a year now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm putting myself out there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been a blessing. You know, but selling those beats, you know, different brackets, it helps narrow down those people that are really willing to invest on themselves.
Yeah.
And it also allows me to make music specifically to those group of people.
Okay. And then when they buy that, let's say they buy the WAV file, right?
Yeah.
How long, what's the ownership behind it? Let's say they buy a WAV. Let's say I'm designer. I bought that Panda beat from you, right? I bought that, right? I paid $200 for it. But I bought it as a lease, right? So how long can I have it for? How would it work in your...
Well, the lease, you know, I register all my beats.
Okay.
You know, through BMI.
Okay.
I also send my beats.
What's BMI?
It's a publishing company. I register all my beats through BMI. I register my beats through the copyrights office.
Okay.
I send a disc once a year.
So basically, mi gente, ASCAP and BMI, if that song is played on the radio or anywhere public, then he'll get a percentage of that. I don't know how it is nowadays, but back when I was doing it, it was like about a quarter
per song. It all depends on...
Where or what.
Yeah.
That's dope. That's awesome.
It all depends on the distribution.
I still get paid on certain stuff, so... I'll get a 50-cent check. Like,
So the way that it works is that I post my beats exclusively through BeatStars, and I'm a verified member on the website. So what the great biggest opportunity, you know, as far as being part of BeatStars is, you know, they have their own distribution channels through Spotify, YouTube Content ID, which is one of the biggest platforms as far as distribution. You know, so every single beat that I submit, not only do I register that beat, but it also gets registered through the YouTube Content ID.
Meaning that
if you guys doing a podcast right now, and if you guys decide to have a YouTube video and want to add some music, you could actually search for my music, and I get paid, you know,
from the ad sales.
Yeah. You know, so I've been very smart as far as going about the whole, you know, music production business, you know, because there's a lot of ways that, you know, as a music producer, you can make money from that, you know.
Now because you have your stuff pretty well lined up from what it sounds like here. Was it all because of something bad that happened, or was it you were just always very smart on the way of how you set up your... And the reason I ask is because I know producers that maybe they got burnt by another artist, and after that, they're like, yo, what's el contrato? I'm going to make a contract with everything, or I'm going to make sure this is aligned and dot all my I's, cross my T's, you know?
To be honest, it's always, you know, ever since I started, I've always had in mind that it's always, that's something that I always wanted to do. You know, I have gotten, you know, burned here and there, but it has not stopped me from doing what I want to do. You know,
it's a lesson.
It's discipline, man. It's not something you know, I've been more than given to a lot of people that have burned their own bridges, you know, with me. But like I said, I hold no grudges. You know, I always look ahead. You know, there's other people that, you know, have gotten burned and have gone through issues
with legal issues
and have put themselves where, you know, they do themselves, but, you know, they do their own thing. No, you know, I've always done my own thing. I've always collaborated with a lot of people. I'm sure you know Dennis in Chicago.
Yeah, we were talking about DYZ Lobo. Big shout out if you're listening. Big
shout out to you guys, you know, and ever since I met them, to be honest, it's been a blessing.
Yeah.
You know, they're my brothers. You know, they've been able to put me where I'm at this point, believe it or not. a lot of the music, a lot of the biggest independent artists out of Chicago, you name it. I mean, I probably worked with them, yeah. sold a beat, gave a free beats, yeah. you know.
Now, when you sell these beats, are you getting credit, like if they put out a mixtape or if it gets on an album in yeah. the future? Like, will your name be on anywhere, like in the...
Well, it's under their discretion at this point.
Okay.
But
because you sold it to them?
I sold it to them, but, you know, the great thing about BeatStars is that they automatically get a contract with my name on it. And my recommendations.
So BeatStar is a website where they'll help manage the process where producers can connect with artists and maybe like share, you know, share their yes. their beats and make sure that there's none of that burning goes on.
That's perfect, man. And that's perfect because that's what we need. Because I was listening to a podcast on my 3-hour drive here to Grand Rapids, and I'm sure you guys have heard it. It's Brilliant Idiots with Charlamagne Tha God, and they know a lot of the music
industry
aspect, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how nowadays, and I mentioned this earlier in the podcast, yeah. nowadays you have cats that are the producer, the singer, the rapper, the manager, yeah. and unfortunately they get burnt out too easily. So I'm glad there's websites out there that are doing that for you so that you could perfect your craft and just do what you do best, you know,
yeah.
and then collect money from there. You know, yeah. and that's perfect, and that's what I think needs to happen more in the musical, in the musical area, because it tends to be everybody wants to do their own thing, you know, and then the quality just goes down.
Like, it goes down. I mean, it's all about dedication, you know, and having discipline to what you want to do.
Yeah,
you know you got to work on yourself, you have to work on yourself.
Yeah,
you know. People are going to criticize your music based on the amount of effort you put into it.
Yeah.
So the less criticism, you know you're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, BeatStars, you know, going back to BeatStars, is the biggest platform, not just for producers, but for artists too.
Okay.
Because it's a social platform.
Yeah.
You know, just like Twitter,
mm-hmm.
Facebook.
Yeah.
You get verified based on the amount of, you know, traffic you get to your website, people commenting, and
so artists could go in there. Oh, like yeah. an actual artist will go in there. Yeah. And he'll buy. He'll listen. Can he preview your beat and then listen to it?
Oh yeah.
What's your how can they find you in
on BeatStars? Yeah. Just go to beatstars.com and just search for O'Neill Beats.
Okay. Yeah, because that's definitely
O-N-E-I-L-L.
Yeah. O N E I L Beats.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, man. But that's one of the biggest things is the discipline in the production.
Yeah.
You know, and you could hear it from there. I'm sure we're gonna share a couple clips, maybe from YouTube. Maybe we could share on our podcast so people could hear. Because I'm sure people are like, man, I want to hear what are some of the songs that he's done. So, do you have any songs that you could throw out there that somebody could search on YouTube to kind of listen to your beats?
There's too many to name right now.
I think that's a good problem.
I think
to have.
After this beer, yeah. I mean, to be honest, on a monthly basis, I sell about 100 to 200 beats.
Wow,
that's awesome.
Let's just put it that way.
So
it's hard to keep track of who does what. So, you know,
on a monthly basis, how much do you produce?
to be honest, I do 3 or 4 beats a month.
Wow. Okay.
But sometimes I do less, you know.
But and that's a lot because you're a father.
Yeah, I'm a father. I work full time. Yeah. You know, there's things in my life that I have to put priority on top of mm-hmm. music. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, as soon as I have any free time, that's basically all
wow.
I do.
Wow.
You know, but it's again. The platform that I have set up for myself does a lot more work for me.
The lead work, yeah.
So all I do a beat, you know, I record previews of the beat, you know, me doing my thing, mm-hmm. and you know, that way it gets people to listen to what's coming next.
Yeah.
Just like an artist, when you hear an artist throw previews of a song on YouTube or on Facebook especially, mm-hmm. you know, you can hear what's gonna come next.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's basically what I've been doing. You know, it's, you know, I may not produce a whole lot because of everything in my life, just like any other person that is doing music. You know, as soon as I have anything ready, you know, that's all I do. You know, I basically, you know, I give a taste to people out there before, you know.
And what's the genre that you're working on lately a lot more?
I'm going to say, you know, Bryson Tiller, you know, that Soul Trap,
okay.
The Drake. I mean,
it's what's hot.
It's what's hot.
Now, the question of the day, is reggaeton dead?
That's why I asked you
what genre you worked with, because you mentioned that you were doing a lot of reggaeton.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of
In the 2005, 2006,
it's everywhere.
2006, I remember a lot because that's when I made pretty good money from doing reggaeton, and yeah. And it was where producers were busy all the time.
You know when? Oh, yeah. It was around 2005 or so when Oye Mi Canto came out and it blew up in American mainstream.
What was his name?
Nori, the rapper Nori.
Nina Sky.
Nina Sky, Daddy Yankee, a Big Mayo,
and then Gasolina. Well, and then,
remember that the original song was with Tego, not with Daddy Yankee.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. I didn't know that.
You didn't?
Hot takes.
it was with Tego Calderon.
We gotta search it out
because it's out there.
Tego's a monster, by the way, man. He's my favorite.
Yeah. I was gonna say that.
He's my favorite.
And before you leave, we're going to ask you who your favorites are.
Yeah, he's my favorite.
He's my favorite.
And in a musical standpoint, he's my favorite because he raps in La Clave, right? I'm real big on salsa and everything he raps. And he's a lot of the older folks' favorite, too, because of that. Because he raps on clave.
Yeah, I mean, it's all about in his dialect, too. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, he's from Loíza.
You could tell he was heavily influenced
by that Puerto Rican deep Puerto Rican.
You could tell he's heavily influenced by the old school salsa, the bombi plena.
Oh, yeah.
Afro Boricua, beats and rhythms. That's heavily his foundation. He actually tweeted me once.
No way.
Yeah, let me tell you the story. I had just listened to the Nas and Damian Marley album. It's called Distant Relatives, and it was like about bringing, you know, the black people from the Caribbean, Jamaica, and the black people in America. But then I tweeted Tego, and I was like, I wish we could have had Tego to bring in the Spanish speaking black people, Afro Latinos. And then he tweeted back, and he was like, me too.
Wow.
Tego Calderon, my favorite rapper. English or Spanish, yeah, he's one of my favorite rappers.
He's one of the best.
Tego, yeah, if you're listening to this Spanish show, here. Papa, si tú estás escuchando este show,
okay.
If si tú estás escuchando este show, Tego, we want you on this show.
Tego uno de los mejores.
cuando tú vayas para Chicago.
Y el montón de veces que yo he ido a Puerto Rico, he pasado por Loíza. Solamente para ver si lo veo ahí bebiéndose una cerveza o algo así para conocerlo.
Yo duré un par de verano en Loíza.
Yeah.
Con Yahairi Jesús. Ellos son de Loíza.
For those who don't know, but Loíza, one of the cool things about Loíza is that they have a lot of chinchorros, and chinchorros is basically like little markets, little areas for you to eat. Alcapurria, relleno de papa, all that stuff. But Loíza has a real big, heavy Afro Latino influence, yeah. Right? Because that's where they will be brought in at first.
It's a region of Puerto Rico where there was a lot of production that where they would have enslaved Africans there, but then also what tended to happen is over time, even if Puerto Ricans were in other parts of the island, they would start gravitating because, you know, there's certain parts of Puerto Rico that you see heavily influenced, like a lot of that Taíno influence. Yep. Some of them is maybe a little more European, and you'll have it everywhere, but Loíza really kept its African roots.
Oh, yeah.
It's big super time. Cultural. It's a beautiful place. Like I said, I spent a couple summers there when I was
Loíza is nice, but definitely Tego, one of my favorite, probably the best one. Well,
who are, if you had to pick a top five, everybody that's a top five in hip hop, who are your top five in like reggaeton or Spanish hip hop? We'll put those together.
Oh man.
Oh my God.
I'll go first. I was thinking about it.
Probably have the same ones you do.
I know we got two of the same. So off the top, I'm going to put Tego and I'm going to put Vico C.
Yeah.
I'm going to put those two in there. I'm stuck.
All right, my first one, Vico C.
Come back to me.
Tego Calderon. I gotta say, what's his name? Damn, I will say Temperamento, which a lot of people, he was more indie.
Yeah, he's Christian now, right?
Is he? Yeah. I heard about him.
He's Christian.
Temperamento was a big one.
He can make some dope lyrics for Christ.
Yeah.
Sure.
I will say my fourth one, man, this one's hard because as far as lyricists, Cocuyuela.
Oh, yeah. Cocuyuela, sick.
Yeah, I will say Cocuyuela. And then the fifth will be, I don't know. It's because a lot of them went into this whole I want to sing kind of thing, and that what threw me off.
Oh my god!
Because I Don Omar to me was pretty dope, and then when he was doing the maleanteo and all that stuff, and then to me kind of went into more of the whole singing, more romance, and he kind of sold out more into the media, which I don't blame him.
He's making so much money; it's hard to blame.
No, I mean, he as an artist, he's really good because he's
one of my favorite artists.
The thing about an artist is that an artist has to evolve at some point to be able to, you know, put himself a little bit more out there. So, you know, my top five is,
I gotta throw Tempo in there. Tempo.
Vico C. I was gonna say Tempo.
Yeah.
Don Omar.
Okay.
¿Quién más? I mean, hay muchos artistas. Yeah. There's a lot of artists out there that Coco Yela is really good, pero yo solo doy a Kendo mejor.
Really? Kendo Capone, huh?
Kendo.
Damn.
You know, I'm sorry, Coquillera, pero y Coquillera es uno de los mejores también. Yeah. ¿Tú me entiendes? Yeah. Tú sabes, pero Kendo es una de las personas que si tú escuchas mucho de lo que dice,
yeah,
you know, aparte de la tiraera que tiene, you know, his lyrics is just
really
wow.
And I haven't really listened too much to Kendo, but Coquillera, it brought me back to that old school. It brought me back to 2005, you know?
Yeah.
When reggaeton was in Mariantero. Yeah. And that's why I fucks with Coquillera, because he is, like, to me, like, brought it back. And then now, if you listen to reggaeton, and back to the question of whether reggaeton is dead or not.
Before you finish the question, I won't do a top five, but I'll put in a third one in there. I'm going to take it to Dominican Republic, Lapi Consciente.
Yes.
I would throw him in there if we're talking lyricist, right?
But man, but the Dominican, no offense, but Dominican reggaeton, I can't mess with Dominican.
Hip-hop
or reggaeton. I don't know why.
It's not really reggaeton. It's dembow.
They call it dembow. Yeah. But like, I know.
It's like saying, reggaeton and like reggae.
Yeah.
They have some similarities, but it became its own thing over time. Dembow developed into its own form, its own style. You know, just like you could say boom bap rap and then the trap music.
But if you listen to a lot of beats, it actually is 90s reggaeton.
Yeah, it is.
You
know? When underground.
Underground.
What was his name? Playero.
Playero 36.
Yeah. You know, I did submit some of the tracks to Playero a long time ago.
Wow.
I work with a lot of people, man.
Yeah. And that's the thing about producers is that you guys work with a lot of famous people, but it's more of behind the scenes kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? That's what makes the difference, you know. And you know, artists obviously are always in the front, the producers are in the back, but at the same time, you're the one that's pushing that artist forward.
You know?
But back to the reggaeton question. So, reggaeton, is it dead or not? I personally think reggaeton is still hanging by the thread.
It is.
Because, you know, I gotta give a big shout out to my Colombian people, because
Colombia took it.
Colombia has taken it to a whole nother level. And if it wasn't for Colombia, Nicky Jam wouldn't be around. And Nicky Jam has
helped give them the light.
Yeah.
Nicky Jam,
but he has Colombia. Given them a lot of props, because they revived the reggaeton, because a lot of these guys, you know, there was nothing really happening. Don Omar was, I don't know what he was doing. I heard somebody was back to cutting hair, you know, and all this stuff. Like, there was no more concerts. And this is another big topic that I want to bring up, is that nowadays you don't make money out of the distribution. You don't make, because everything's all streaming online, you have Apple Music, so you don't make money out of that. What you make money out of is the shows or any other outlet that you have, you know. So with that happening, reggaeton kind of died off a little bit. It's hanging by the thread, just like you know, other musical genres that are out there. But I think the fact that they were able to take it into South America and use more of that dance type, something that you could bump in the club and it's not heavily maleanteo, has kept it alive throughout the years.
Oh yeah, Colombia, Mexico.
Yeah,
Mexico too. Big shout out to Mexico. It's actually one of the few countries that, and Panama, that supports reggaeton.
What's happening to reggaeton is similar to la trayectoria de la salsa.
where the foundation. Yeah. Let me tell you how.
Not the same, bro. Not the same. Not the same.
Let me tell. Let me tell you why.
Did you see the Puerto Ricans in the room? Kind of went up.
Let me tell you why. I'm not saying that the music is similar at all.
Yeah.
Even though there's
no. You're talking about the I know what
the trend.
And I know you're not Puerto Ricans. Don't like salsa to be taken away from them. But the truth is, there were point in times where Venezuela was running salsa. There were point in times where DR was running
Colombia
it.
También.
There, Colombia was running it. And with reggaeton, I feel that within the last couple of years, Colombia might have a bigger influence on setting the pace of the music and what's hot than Puerto Rico. And that's what I mean by it's following a similar trajectory.
Okay. Because I thought you were going to say, the only thing I thought you were going to say que la salsa se estaba muriendo, bro. I was about to say,
I love salsa.
Hard truth is that Colombia supports people, you know, artists from all over the world.
They do, yeah.
That's unfortunate because Puerto Rico, as an artist, if you have reggaeton artists, a salsa artist, you can only do so much in Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Right.
But as soon as you hit Colombia,
that's where they stay alive.
Yeah. As soon as you hit Mexico, Peru, yeah. Panama, I mean, that's where everything kind of blows up.
Yeah. I remember a story about Hector Lavoe, and he mentioned, I don't know where I read it at or I heard it from, but I remember him mentioning, and not just from him, but other artists, that when he will make it to Peru, it's this place called El Callao, right, in Peru, and when he saw the people, how much love they had for him, you know, if you go to Peru nowadays, Hector Lavoe is like an Elvis Presley for them. People dress like Hector Lavoe. You know what I'm saying? Like people dress in Vegas for Elvis Presley. They do it for Hector Lavoe. But the thing is that for them, it was like they were religiously committed to those artists. And it's still like that. And I think that's what makes a lot of these people go to a lot of these artists go to Colombia or Peru or any South American country or any Latin American country other than Puerto Rico and get that momentum back.
Yeah,
that's
true.
And I think, like I said, you know, reggaeton's hanging by the thread, but I also have noticed that reggaeton's going back to its roots of that maleanteo kind of, you know, because
it goes in cycles.
Because hip hop, if you look at rap went through a whole phase where it was gangster rap, right? And people were against it. And then now you're starting to get that conscience rap again, right? From like the original type. And I feel like the reggaeton's going through the same cycle. You know, they went through the whole romantic phase while the singing Hector y Tito. And then now it's going into that maleanteo type. Well, you know, so
if you're talking about maleanteo meaning trap.
Spanish trap.
Spanish trap is blowing up in Dominican Republic. I know that. And in Puerto Rico, it's growing.
It's dangerous though, man. But
it's crazy because, you know, I started doing trap music for about a year ago.
Yeah.
Like a year ago, people weren't listening to Spanish trap at all.
Wow.
Like nobody. Now you hear artists, he's locked up, but you hear artists like Anuel, his music, and it's all trap Spanish.
And that's the weird part because and Carlos, you're more of a hip hop head. You might know a little bit more of that the trend. But like I'm noticing now, like more of that conscious rap coming up with people like J. Cole, like what's his name, Chance the Rapper, all these other Kendrick Lamar. And so is reggaeton kind of going the other way? Like now that we don't have that, it's not feeding that vice of the maleanteo, reggaeton going toward that maleanteo now? I mean, trap music in Spanish? Like, I mean,
I think with reggaeton, with Spanish hip hop, and even with English hip hop, there's always cycles, right? Okay. So you're always going to have a bunch of conscious music. You're always going to have a bunch of gangster music, and you do today.
Yeah.
But they get the more shine at different times. So there are artists who all through the whole snap music, you know, snap your finger and all that stuff.
When the South was
they kept the lyricism hardcore, and they went through like a 5-year period where they weren't popping as much, but now they're starting to get more shine again. Yeah. And I think that's probably what's going to happen with reggaeton. You're going to have people who stay doing street music, hardcore, all throughout this little like romantic phase, singy phase in reggaeton. But now, some of those street ones, at least I know in Dominican Republic's music, some of them who are doing dembow or the like Dominican version of hip hop, they've gravitated for Spanish trap, and it's a beautiful marriage because their style mixes really, really well.
What are some good Spanish trap artists out there?
I listen to the music, so I don't know, you know what,
some of you people don't may not like his lyrics, but Anuel, I think he's really good.
Okay.
Some of his songs, some of his songs that are PG-13 rated. Well, actually, they're not really PG-13. Sorry,
rated R.
It's really rated R, rated X.
Yeah.
But you know, as far as the lyricist, you know, and the genre, he's really good.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, there's other people that are doing the similar thing. You know, there's Almighty, there's Arcángel, you know, there's Farruko. There's other artists that are doing the similar thing, but you know, they kind of miss they kind of go back to their roots, you know, as far as doing the whole reggaeton stuff. And I think one point that, you know, reggaeton has phased out because I personally feel like it's phased out because every single song that comes out is basically the same.
Yeah.
You know, it's a love story. It's about the streets. It's about this. It's about that. Yeah. They don't realize that, you know, a lot of these artists they're just redoing a lot of the things from the past.
Yep.
Good example, Daddy Yankee and Cocuyela.
Uh-huh.
Do you guys know of the song "A Donde Voy"?
No. If I hear it.
Do you know who Psycho Unity?
I know the name, but I don't know him very
well. They're unknown. They're unknown at this point, but Psycho Unity was consist of one of my friends, Juan Rodriguez,
in Chicago,
Psycho, in Puerto Rico,
okay.
Divino's brother, before he got murdered. You know, there was, and there was another guy, I forgot his name, but their group was Psycho Unity.
Yeah.
And one of the hit single from their album was "A Donde Voy." Daddy Yankee, and I'm not, you know, I got huge respect for Daddy Yankee, but you know,
stole the
and
song.
Cocuyela. Yeah, I mean, if you hear the song, I got it. You know, you guys can search for it. You know, but it's called "A Donde Voy," basically the same title. Mm-hmm. And the chorus is word for word the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kind of see how a lot of the people are going
recycling music,
recycling what other people have done.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a lot of, you know, you ask, why is reggaeton dead? That's actually one of the reasons.
Okay. And I'm actually hoping that throughout this whole thing, I'm hoping that the new Vico C's, the new,
they're coming.
You know, I'm hoping those guys are popping up, because man, Vico C to me, he took, you know, he had his songs that had his dembows in there, but he had, like, you know, Aquel Que Había Muerto. I bumped that song every single day.
That,
you know, Embocada, Explosión. Like, all those songs are songs that spoke to you. You know what I'm saying?
To be honest, that's to me. Aquel Que Había Muerto by Vico C is one of the best albums that has ever done.
I always loved that
one. Was it 3 o 7 de septiembre?
No, that was 13 de septiembre. Friday the 13th was before, yeah. But okay. Aquel Que Había Muerto, what happened was after he became, after he gave his life to Christ, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he created Aquel Que Había Muerto, but they also had a couple other songs in there that just resonated, and he never mentioned the person he was talking about. You know, obviously he's talked about Jesus Christ, but he will always have positive conscious rap. And it was one of those things that was like, damn, like, to me, it will resonate. You know, if you ever felt like just driving, like on the way here, I was listening to Vico C the whole time.
Yeah.
Embocada, Explosión, Aquel Que Había Muerto, all those songs were like legit what made me remember how it was back in the day, you know?
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and that there's always a way out.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the artists that you can really listen to it and not get tired of it.
Yeah,
you know, because a lot of his lyrics is, you know, you can relate to it,
or
you know, just someone that you know can relate to it.
Yeah, exactly.
You listen to that, and you know.
And that's the biggest thing with music, you know. It's just that you know, I know you do production, I do the engineering and all that, but when I have an artist that can relate to what we're talking about, and we have a person that brings that up, that's what keeps them going. And I think that's why society now is going towards the Kendrick Lamars, the J. Cole's, you know, the you know, Vic Mensas, you know, people that have conscious rap. And I hope that it goes like that in the Spanish hip hop. And I hope that this whole Malianteo and trap is just a little phase, because at the end of the day, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that live up to those lyrics, you know?
And it's not just in the music, right? Music is a reflection of the society. Yeah. So you're also, just like you see the some of the more conscious rap coming up, you're also going to see, you guys see the girls fighting. but you're also going to see society reflecting it as well. I think Puerto Rico's prime right now for it to come back.
Yeah.
In the U.S., you have, you know, Black Lives Matter movements, all these things against Trump. But what's going on in Puerto Rico? Puerto Rico's doing really bad with the economy. They're about to put a control board to take over pretty much the country, eliminating democracy. People's voices won't be heard.
Yeah.
So what does that mean? The artists, the young kids right now, 15, 16 years old, who are starting to rap, they're going to write what they see about around them. Yep. They're going to write what they see in the news. And so that's going to be reflected in there. So I feel that it's coming.
Yep. Yeah, and it's going to resonate.
and that's our sign right there that we're going to start wrapping it up right now.
We have Ivan.
We have el Talibán que entró aquí haciendo ruido.
Hey, we have a question for you.
Jump on this mic real quick.
We were talking about music. And we need you to give the audience some good recommendation for Spanish trap, especially
Spanish trap. I know we talked about the Dominican Republic a little bit.
We need some artists.
What are some artists that we could
speak on the mic?
Spanish trap. What's going on? People, what's going on? No, aquí tranquilo, tú sabes, mi gente. Chill.
Get closer.
Pero y'all talking about Spanish trap? Y'all talking about music?
Yeah. Give him some artists real quick before
Spanish
we wrap this
trap,
up.
Spanish trap. You got Chelo Chacalaca, you know his time came. he was on the game for that, but his time came now. You got Christian Dior out of New York. He got a little Spanish trap in him. Messiah.
He's lyrical. He's pretty dope.
He's lyrical from, you know what I'm saying, from New York. He got a little trap with him too. Tú sabes que el papá del rap, el lápiz.
Lápiz consciente.
Yeah. That's on him. Some other artists out there too, you know.
Right, but that's enough. And then the last question for you.
Yeah, let's see. Who's your top five?
Top five. It could be reggaeton or Spanish hip hop. We're putting
right
on your
now?
Spot. No, or in general, whatever
in
you
general,
want.
I'm gonna go with right now. Anuel.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
He's been named a few times already.
He's in there. Arcángel in there too.
I thought about putting Arcángel, but I didn't know if I would or not. I thought about Arcángel.
To me, he's lyrical.
To me,
Arcángel is just started to do that now.
You know what I mean?
But he's been there for too long, and I've met him in Chicago.
His first album, for me, his first album was amazing. Arcángel's first album,
yeah,
I loved it.
It was.
But he's
just doing that now. But he's good.
He's just starting.
His stuff is good. You know, as far as Arcángel.
Yeah, I'm telling
they
you.
Agree,
yeah,
they agree
no,
to disagree.
No, they agree to disagree.
He's been in the game for long.
Yeah. He's been in the game for a long time.
Papá del Raj, he got to be in the lápiz consciente. He's been doing it for years, too. And I'm talking about in the Spanish general world, you know. And let me see two more.
I was stuck at three.
Daddy Yankee.
I love Daddy Yankee before 06. Before 2006.
Yeah.
I love Daddy Yankee. After 06, I stopped listening to him.
For me, it's,
he's really talented.
You didn't mention Vico C, bro?
What?
No.
Es que tú no eres boricua, that's one, bro.
That's the thing. He came and went.
But he's still around, man. He's a legend. But you know what? We're going to start wrapping up this show because El Talibán came over here. Hopefully, he takes me to a Dominican spot to get some food over here in Grand Rapids. But, you know, I want to say thank you so much for joining
us. Man.
How can they find you in social media?
Yeah, plug in
social
all your media. Websites.
Twitter. Go to official at official mix beat. Instagram, O'Neal Beats. Facebook, O'Neal Beats. And just my website, you know, mixbeatsforsale.com and O'NealBeats.com.
Okay.
That's what's up.
And once again, audience, if you like what you heard today, you've been listening to us. You love that it's authentic. We got the girls running around the house. My daughter's playing with Nelson's kids.
My two girls.
Truth is, if you like what you heard, you'll really help us out. You don't got to pay anything. We do it free out of love. But
Go on iTunes, subscribe, rate, review. Yeah. You can go on SoundCloud, subscribe, rate, review. If you got a friend, share it with them. And last but not least, I want to give a quick shout out to Jesus, listening in from Detroit. He's been texting me saying that he wants to make sure he gets a shout out. he was tuned in and on Periscope for a little while.
Oh, that's
so
what's up.
I live streamed about like 5 minutes of it earlier. So we got a couple people who watched us.
Big shout out to everybody that listens all over the world. We have some listeners from Japan, from
France, the UK, Germany. Yeah. Most Puerto are in the Rico. US. Yep. DR, Colombia. I had some from Argentina last time I checked. So it might be one or two in each country, but you know, share with a friend.
The big shout out. Gracias, mi gente, for tuning in again. Hey. And this was La Verdad Podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.